Hi, and welcome to Jolly's Fall 2016 podcast series. This is Nick Thompson, the co-principal editor of the Journal of Language and Literacy Education, a peer-reviewed, open-access journal housed in the Department of Language and Literacy Education at the University of Georgia. Today, I will be speaking with Jeannie Bissonnette, an assistant professor of secondary literacy education at Iowa State University, about her piece titled The Trouble with Niceness, How a Preference for Pleasantry Sabotages Culturally Responsive Teacher Preparation. Thank you, Jeannie, for joining me today, and I look forward to hearing about your work. First, you and many others have noted the large percentage of white women in the education, and you argue that, and I quote, niceness allows for white students to control their social environments and defend their privilege. First, what would you call this alternative model to niceness? And second, how does engaging this alternative model benefit pre-service teachers who are not privileged in the same ways as white teachers?
Well, I would first suggest that when we talk about an alternative model, what we really need to question instead is how can we hold true with fidelity to what we are advancing whenever we say that we are preparing teachers to be multicultural oriented and equity minded. So it's really this idea of within the understanding and the phenomena of culturally responsive education. It's a very capacious idea, but it's important to understand that we also, as teacher educators, must understand that whiteness is also its own culture. So creating these spaces and moments and opportunities for our students, which we know by and large are predominantly white females, to A, understand how they have been positioned, how they've been conditioned through social experiences, biographical experiences, and helping them to really reflect on how those pieces of who they are, which they oftentimes don't have to question, which is the very essence of privilege, can penetrate into some of their instructional decisions. So I don't know so much that it is this alternative model so much as it is being faithful to what we're saying when we say, yes, I prepare pre-service teachers to be culturally responsive to all students. I really like your second question about why would this approach to teacher education benefit even students who do not belong to privileged groups. And what I would say to that, Nick, is it's really this idea that we have seen in the scholarship, and it's been critiqued for a long time, that we oftentimes assume that equity and multicultural education is something that should be left to people from these marginalized communities. And I think that that, again, really furthers a narrative that is disingenuous and does a disservice to the whiteness that penetrates teacher education programs and school systems more comprehensively. So I think as a teacher educator, it is very powerful for all of your students to understand that no matter what your sociocultural positioning might be, when you're preparing to understand those dispositions and knowledges and skills that you have to have to equitably teach all students, you have to be able to develop the language to critique your whiteness and your maleness and to understand even how to be able to communicate about these different divisions of oppression that we see in curriculum and in pedagogy. But I really do think that it starts with teacher educators prompting these critical dialogues and modeling some of those conversations and instances where we see our own privilege so that all of our students can understand that regardless of what your sociocultural background might be, it's absolutely critical to your work as a teacher to be able to understand who you are as a teacher, because that understanding shapes every instructional maneuver that you make.
Great. In your piece, you discuss how the audit culture perpetuates niceness. You paraphrase a claim by Alsop and Miller from 2014 that, and I'm going to quote you again, despite failing to prepare their PSTs or pre-service teachers to work in equity-minded ways, teacher education programs often pass their NCATE credentials easily. What place do credentialing entities have in producing culturally responsive teachers?
Well, I think that is another really great question because, once again, you know, we just had these new teacher ed standards released just last week, and we know there's a long-standing history of these credentialing agencies simply not understanding the depths of these different equity-oriented processes that pre-service teachers need to be able to understand and perform if they're going to teach all of their students in culturally responsive and affirming ways. So I think that the answer to that question is they don't play much of a role. In fact, Dr. Brandon Sams and I have an article coming out here soon where we examine how the NCAS standard and the PPAT and the EdTPA talk about reflection processes. And over 200 coded instances of the word, we found that there was one reference to reflection that actually encapsulated those critical elements. And by critical, I mean understanding one's own positionality and one's own biases and prejudice and how those might impact one's teaching practices. One instance across all these different documents that throw the word reflection around constantly. So that's really disconcerting to realize that here's this word that we've been talking about since the age of Dewey. And when we talk about it within these documents, what we're really talking about is just basic pedagogical reflection. So what did I do today that worked? How can I be more efficient? Did that warm-up work? Why are we not? Did that group discussion work? Why are we not? That's what we are assessing pre-service teachers on. And so I would suggest that as teacher educators, it's really important to be cognizant of the fact that these credentials do not capture pre-service teachers' ability to maneuver these different forms of reflection processes. But I'd also suggest to teacher educators that that just means that we need to up our game and figure out how do we open up these iterative and discursive opportunities for pre-service teachers to work through who they are as racialized, genderized, classed, sexualized beings, because all of those pieces are always at play within a classroom, again, whether or not they understand that or not. So it's just understanding that if these agencies are not capturing these conversations, that just makes it even more important for teacher educators to figure out how we can do that in our classroom spaces.
Great. Your paper is focused on how teacher education programs can help pre-service teachers, and I'll quote you. As they develop the equity-oriented dispositions that act as a fulcrum of culturally responsive pedagogy, you go on to point out that that is not an easy feat. Given the barriers to and apprehension of many of us to engage in these difficult conversations, do you encourage teachers of K-12 students to engage in these dialogues also?
Absolutely. I would say that if you are a teacher of any capacity, it is your moral obligation to understand who you are as a sociocultural being because, again, every single instructional choice you make is informed by that positionality. So when I work within school systems and I work with in-service teachers, a lot of times the conversation, if unfortunate, is these teachers wanting actual application tools. And they want to know, okay, well, how do I do this? And what does this look like? And that's natural. I think as teachers, as practitioners, that's how most of our brains work, is we see that application piece as sort of the ultimate goal. And while it is, to a degree, sometimes what we don't do such a great job of connecting is that the foundation of the skills, so how we do these different equity-oriented actions with our students and for our students, those are really undergirded by our dispositions. So, like I talk with teachers and I talk with pre-service teachers as well about this, but I say when you pick up a fellow, you're making a sociocultural choice. When you pick up Huxin, when you pick up something by Jacqueline Woodson, or when you find these opportunities to bring in an author who's more on the peripheral of the canon, that's a choice that is osmosed by who you are as a person. When you decide that you're going to give a worksheet to a lower tract class, but you're going to have a conversation with an honors class because you think that behaviorally one class can, quote, unquote, handle that type of pedagogy versus the other one who can't. Again, those are decisions that are informed by who you are as a person, your own biographical experiences, and oftentimes those are really firmly situated in your schooling experiences. And there's a wealth of scholarship that talks about the types of pedagogies that are oftentimes reserved for our marginalized students. So, yeah, I think it's really critical to, in all walks of life, as a teacher educator, whether or not you're supporting in-service teachers or helping your pre-service teachers develop those dispositions, I find that it's just really important to have an explicit conversation about, we are going to get to the skills, we are going to talk about how you do these things and what they look like within your science classroom, within your English classroom. But hey, let's back up a second and let's talk about those dispositions that ultimately are fused throughout those skills that you choose to implement or don't choose to implement. And that's really, for a lot of people, that's a foundational understanding of not just being a teacher, but being a human being, is understanding that your actions are oftentimes really tied into something deeper that's beneath the surface. So most of the time I find that teachers are willing to have those conversations and want to explore those ideas further. So I think it is absolutely essential, no matter what your domain is, whether or not you're pre-service, in-service, working on your master's part-time while you teach, if you work with students, you owe it to them and you owe it to yourself to be mindful of the fact that who you are as a person is always at play and is always shaping the curricular and the pedagogical maneuvers that you assign to certain groups of students.
Thank you, and I couldn't agree more. And your final discussion of how to deconstruct and reconstruct standardized curriculum in the pursuit of culturally responsive teaching, you show a distaste for the Common Core state standards, but you don't recommend circumventing them. Instead, you offer a path towards working within these standards. Why is it important, if at all, to model for pre-service teachers a respect for the standards despite the shortcomings?
Well, I will tell you that, by and large, the pre-service teachers who I work with, and also reflecting on my own tenure in teacher education, there is a critique that resounds throughout all these different conversations that as teacher educators and scholars in general, we oftentimes focus on the theoretical. But the truth is that while so many of us are well-versed in theory and we use it regularly to buttress our scholarship, we're working with pre-service teachers who need to understand how to navigate the realities of the educational realm that they are about to enter into. So one thing that I think is very important, and it's something that I do almost every class period, regardless of the class that I'm teaching, is we talk about standards. And I do that in a way that we are critiquing. So we talk about Common Core, and we talk about what are the different political processes that brought Common Core about, and where did the money come from, and who's for it, and who's against it, and why might that be, and who stands to benefit? Because I really want them to have an understanding of the fact that teaching, despite this narrative that teachers should be apolitical, well, you can't be. It's impossible. And education has never been apolitical. Freire talks about this a lot, this idea that classrooms are microcosmic places that mirror on a smaller scale what's happening more broadly in society. So, A, I want them to understand that they have been put in an inherently political position. And then what I want them to understand is that you can't beat the system if you don't know how to best the system. You need to understand these anchor standards, and you need to understand how they speak to each other and across each other. You need to understand how literacy has been positioned and understood within these standards. Because then what happens is once we get that foundational understanding, then we can start talking about how can we meet these standards and put these standards on our board and our lesson plans when we go to be interviewed by our principal during a post-observation interview, but also how you can subvert them. So if I know that I have to be teaching lessons specific to the language strand or to the informational text strand of Common Core, well, I can certainly do that. But I can also do that by picking a text like in Rike's Journey, for example, where we find out about one young man's voyage from Honduras to America to be with his mom and all the different realities that he experienced trying to get from Central America here. We have this dominant Trump narrative of rapists and thieves and murderers, and here we have this story that is an actual account of one boy trying to get to his mom who had to leave because her family was starving, and all the different steps along the way. So I give that example because I say, here's where I just use an informational text, literary nonfiction, but I also was very intentional about the text that I picked because I want to make sure that I'm bringing up these conversations that are more on the peripheral of this conventional canonical text. But I also want them to be aware of the socio-political realities too. So I'm positioning them to understand not only these standards, whether or not they're Common Core, or they could very well be something else in another 5 or 10 or 15 years, and then we'll do the same thing then. But I want them to understand how they can meet those standards, work with those standards, but how they can also do those things, regardless of what the standards might be, that they can still use their autonomy and their ability, their power to be a change agent as a teacher to affect culturally relevant and responsive realities for their students. I think it's really key to have those explicit conversations, and I would also say to model. So as much as I can, when I work with pre-service teachers and in-service teachers, I give them examples. Here's what this looks like in practice. And I think that that's when the classroom is so much your reality, that's just what you respond to, needing to see these things in a concrete way. So something that I task myself with is making sure that rather than just talking about these ideas theoretically and conceptually, that I give every day multiple practical examples of what these realities would look like when realized. And I think that by and large, that really helps me get the buy-in that I want and that my students really crave.
Great. Well, thank you, Jeannie, so much for speaking with me today. Listeners, to learn more about Jeannie's work, check out Jolly's fall issue to be published in November.